know, I just fell down. I blacked out, fell down. And, you know, I woke up, it's a pool of blood on the floor. Pretty sure my nose is broken, but.
All of that occurred away from the action, and Gene Katie just a little upset with what's happened so far.
Robinson around Ostertag.
Down again is Jawan Johnson, 3 for 3 from the field.
You're listening to Three Men in a Two-Man Tent, a proud partner of the Boiled Sports Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Purdue Basketball Beat. I'm Michael, and with me is Anish. What's up, Anish?
Yeah, what's up? Tourney time, let's do it.
Tourney time. Oh,
tourney time, it's the best time. This is the best, like, month of the sporting year. Like, this is it, because the tourney, like, conference tournaments happen, and then it's the March Madness, and then the NBA playoffs start, and the NBA playoffs are the greatest thing of all time.
They're pretty good. Yeah,
they're the greatest thing of all time. And then last year there was the World Cup. Like, it led right into the World Cup. It was the best.
Wait, last year? Don't you mean two years ago? Yeah, that was like,
no, that was it. No, last year, 2014.
Okay.
Man. Yeah, the World Cup, the soccer World Cup.
Where has time gone? I thought it was 2012. What year is this?
I thought you were talking. If you're talking about the Cricket World Cup, that is happening right now, and I can update you.
I am a big India supporter.
That's right. You're a big India supporter. Yeah, that's right. The defending world champions. What are you gonna do? That's right. We're the best.
What can I say? I'm a front follower. You know what I mean? Sure.
So you'll be rooting for Kentucky this year.
Yes, Kentucky. I root for the Patriots as well. I'm like LeBron James. Like, if you've won a championship in the last 5 years, I'll wear your hat.
You're the Drake. You're the Drake of this podcast.
The funniest, probably the single funniest thing I've ever seen on the internet. This thing was so funny that I didn't even laugh. Like, it broke my brain. It broke the laugh center of my brain. Like the title. It was a collage of pictures, and the title was like, Drake is the ultimate wag, right? And it was just him, like, cuddled up to all of these superstars, you know. It's him next to John Calipari. Yes. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Him, yes, like, cuddled up next to LeBron James. And he's like, there's this one picture, and listener out there, whoever you are, I wish I could describe it to you. I wish I could paint a picture in your mind. But he's like, I think it's LeBron James. And, you know, LeBron is like 2 feet taller than Drake. But Drake's got, like, his head is slightly tilted back laughing. His hand is, he's got one hand, like, on LeBron's shoulder, and the other hand is just, like, playfully flung out. Have you seen that one?
It's top five pictures ever taken. Yes.
Ever.
Without a doubt.
I want to frame it and look at it when I'm having a shitty day and just be like, yes,
Thank you, Drake, for existing.
You're a Raptors fan. Don't let that hold you back.
He's a Kentucky fan too, but you know, until John Calipari leaves.
I don't know how much money he gave Kentucky, but he must have given a lot, because he warmed up with them at their Midnight Madness.
Yeah, and he airballed, didn't he?
He did.
He was the best.
I'm not a huge fan of his music, but he is a much better musician than he is
now. Hey, I don't mind the new album. The new Drake isn't that bad. The new Drake is pretty good. New Kendrick dropped this week, so you can't really do much about it. But
that's more of my speed. Yeah, Drake is too, like, he's like the rap equivalent of the guy outside of the girl's window sobbing, playing an acoustic guitar, you know? Like, it's
too, hey, much. Man. He feels. He's got lots of feels.
He's got feelings. Don't
he's
hate on
him. He's got lots of feels.
Give me Kendrick Lamar. I want to hear about him shooting people. Where were we?
I don't know.
Anyway,
we've got a postseason game to talk about. We do.
Oh my God! And it's a postseason game that's not the Big Ten tournament, where we get blown out by 30 points by Nebraska.
That is true. That is very true. So before we start, Jay from the site is going to put this all together in a mini podcast, like a 10 minute short, But right after the IU-Purdue football game, which was Thanksgiving weekend, we did a five-man podcast.
We did a five-way.
It was a good five-way. It was a good five-way. And we all made predictions for what we thought would happen during basketball.
Let me
read these to you. You had 11-1 the non-conference, 9 conference wins, and we'd be a bubble team, but we'd be in. And your comment was that they don't play, Purdue doesn't play a single ranked team in the non-conference, and the Big Ten might not be great. So for the most part, you're pretty close.
I'm going to pat myself on the back a little bit
there. Damn good for me. I was 10 non-conference wins, 8 conference wins, and 1 Big Ten tournament win. A solid bubble team, but we're in. And, quote, unrealistic to expect a top 4 or 5 Big Ten team, not as top-heavy of a – even though it's not as top-heavy of a conference as last year, and with 8 conference wins, we're solidly on the bubble.
There you go. I think that's good. That's pretty good. That's a reasonable statement.
It was a reasonable statement, but it was wrong. We finished 3rd or 4th.
Tied for third.
That's right, yeah. They got the tiebreaker. Dowd, 19 wins and in. Was what he said. That's pretty close. Pretty good. Jay was 20 to 22 wins because he can just take any kind of numbers and just, we'll win somewhere between 15 and 36 games. We'll be fine.
And 20 and we'll be in.
He said we were not even close to the bubble. We'd be solidly in. And then his quote was, I expect 20 to 22 wins. Will I be shocked when they go 16 and 14? No, but I don't think I can handle another disappointing season again.
He was, for the listeners out there, he was crying and appeared to have some sort of drink when he was saying this. It was really an emotional podcast.
But a Z Lions fan, or Dave as we know him, said 21 wins, Saturday of the Big Ten tournament, and nowhere near the bubble.
Wow.
That's pretty good. Pretty good, Dave.
I think I'm going to go to him for like investment advice because that was pretty solid.
So the biggest thing, as I'm thinking about my retort, I was thinking about my retort to Jay talking smack on Twitter about how right he was.
Right.
Was none of us expected the non-conference season to go as disastrously as it did, and none of us expected the conference season to go as well as it did.
Right.
So, like, this team was completely confused. It was the team in December was not a tournament team. Like, that was it.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you would have asked our predictions December 30th or December 31st after the last non-conference game, I think the answers would have been much, much different.
Oh, for sure. But
Eight and four in the non-conference.
Eight and five in the non-conference.
Eight and five.
Mm-hmm.
So this team was like, I remember I wrote a post in early January after they had like beat Minnesota or something like that. Maybe it was a little bit later than that before they played IU, but it was still kind of early on where it was, you know, here's what they have to do to get in the tournament.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it, and in my post I was like, this is obviously absurd, but but for the sake of argument, you know, just in case. But yeah.
Hey, man, I mean, somehow Maddie turned it around, and he looks to be safe. You know, AJ and John Octius and Ray Davis, defensive player of the year, Ray Davis,
right,
saved his job. I mean, that's as easy as it gets, right?
He had his comment. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was it. I mean, he's pretty safe, and we can pretty safely call him the coach of the future at Purdue. I mean, I don't think he's going anywhere with this tournament berth in the next couple of years. Like this gets him time, whether you like that or not. But
well, and he said,
I do. I love that. He's my guy. So moving forward,
he had said that the biggest change for him was playing Octius and Davis more minutes. And that's an interesting comment for me because, you know, there were some pretty deep rotations early on in the season.
Yeah, there were. I mean, we were all complaining about it. That was the biggest complaint was early in the season. Painter didn't know who he had.
Right.
And he showed it. It wasn't that, you know, it wasn't that breaking of a point, right? Like it, we all knew that.
Right. This wasn't like some great insight that we all had.
I mean, exactly.
Everyone pretty much knows that 8 deep is usually better than 10 or 11 deep, right? Because if it's one of those things like with quarterbacks, right? To talk about our
sad football
team for a second. You know, if you've got 3 quarterbacks, you've got none, right?
Like that's right. Well, unless you're Ohio State, but yes. Well, yeah.
But most schools don't have the budget to pay 3 quarterbacks. Like Ohio State. So you know, if you don't have, if you've got an 11 deep rotation, then you've got a bad rotation. But I think they've really settled in now. And the only question is the whole PJ versus Bryson thing that kind of goes back and forth.
I think if hopefully Bryson sticks around next year, I haven't heard anything. I don't expect to hear anything. But if he sticks around, I think he's going to be a major part of the rotation next year. I think PJ will get the start, but I think Bryson will be kind of the first or second guy off the bench. Like he'll be playing kind of the Smotherman role this year, or maybe even the Matthias role of this year, where he's one of the first like people to you know, the first substitution to come in. So I think it's recency bias too, but I think I'm comfortable now with PJ taking that spot over. I think he'll make enough of a leap. I hope Bryson will make enough of a leap to make it you know, interesting. But you know, we should be cool, like pretty cool to watch next year. I think
there's a pretty significant jump between backup point guard and starting point guard, and I think that's not something that PJ can prove he can do until he's given the chance to do it.
That's right. But
in the last, you know, 4 to 6 games, I mean, against Illinois, I feel very comfortable saying that he's the reason Purdue won the Illinois game.
Oh, yeah, totally. And a loss there would have been disastrous.
Although, as a 9 seed, I mean, who knows, right?
Like, but so I was stunned at the way. So moving toward the tournament, I guess, now that we can talk about it, I was stunned Purdue got a 9 and Ohio State got a 10.
Now, so I was initially stunned about Ohio State, but they have 0 quality wins, quality road wins.
They've got
none. So if you want to knock them on something, I think
what's our quality road win?
Yeah.
I mean, our biggest road win was at Indiana, and it turns out Indiana's not that great.
They got a 10 seed. We were rated one spot above IU.
Yes. Which is crazy. How did we get the Midwest if we were the last 9 seed? That was another question I had.
So so when it came out, I thought, oh, Purdue must have been the top 9 seed.
But okay, so if you look, the other 9 seeds are LSU, and they were in the East, which is weird.
Right.
The South was St. John's. You would think those two would switch, but whatever. Right. And in the West, it was OK State. So OK State must have been the top. I don't have the S curve in front of me, but OK State must have been the number one 9 seed. It must have gone OK State, St. John's, LSU, and then Purdue. So which is why it's weird. I mean, I excuse me. I think I was very envious of LSU's spot. If we had to be stuck first, I wanted to be the 10 or 11 seed that plays in Pittsburgh. Like that would have been perfect. It was right down the road for me. I could have gone. Butler's playing down the road, but they're playing at a bad time.
Have you notified them? Have you told them that this is inconvenient?
Well, I was hoping that I saw Butler and Purdue played on both on Thursday, so I was hoping Purdue would play during the day so I could slack off at work and watch. Right. And then at night, I could go grab my Butler gear and go to the game. That is not how the tournament worked out because they didn't consult me. All they got to do is give me a call. That's it. It was a simple phone call. Anyway, the LSU spot where they are the number 9 to Villanova. That was out of these number one, or, you know, out of the number one seeds to get, I think that would have been the best for Purdue. Nova's really good, but I think we have some people on the roster. I think actually maybe only Ray Davis on the roster has experience against people like Ryan Arcidiacono and those kind of guys. But I think what we play them 3 years ago, like when they were freshmen, when AJ and Davis were freshmen, I think.
No, I think we played them in 2011.
Oh, was it the year before? Okay. Man, Arcidiacono must be like 86 years old.
Let me check that.
But
I've already demonstrated that I have little concept of different years. But while I'm checking that, I do have to correct you on something.
Go ahead.
The top number 9 seed. Excuse me. I tried to mute my mic before I coughed, and I think I failed.
That was a good one. It was smooth. It was very smooth.
The top number 9 seed was actually St. John's.
Really? Then, wow. They put them in the South then. I don't know where they're playing. It doesn't list where they're playing, but okay. Well, whatever.
They're playing in Charlotte.
Yeah, that would be a South city. So I don't know.
But Charlotte is, well.
Where's LSU playing?
LSU is playing in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they should have switched those two around. I don't understand why they gave St. John's why they wouldn't put St. John's in Pittsburgh. But if they were the top number 9, but yeah, whatever.
Well, yeah, whatever.
But I think we would have matched up like as well as possible against Villanova. I think Duke is the problem with Duke is that they play like a better version of Purdue. They play defense pretty well. They're surrounding shooters around a transcendent big. It's just they do everything better than Purdue. So I think that would have been disastrous. Wisconsin, that wouldn't have been bad, but I don't think that would have been allowed as per tourney rules. And just because you can't play in the first weekend, you can't play the same conference. And that leaves Kentucky. And guess who we got?
So Purdue played Villanova, you are correct, in 2012, and that was Davis and Hammonds.
Mm-hmm. So, I believe that was Arcidiacono's freshman year as well. And that kid was, I mean, he could ball back then too. Yeah. So,
he was 3 of 14 for that game.
Yeah.
18 points.
He must have gotten to the line a ton, but
he did.
Man, I was looking at them and I'm like, they're a talented team, but I think, I don't know, I think we can match up pretty well with them. Yeah. Well,
I think Purdue loses against any of the number one seeds, but
yeah, for sure.
On it, if they play 100 games, they beat Villanova slightly.
Yes, more than the rest. And the other thing was that this is why I was kind of rooting for Iowa to beat Penn State in the Big Ten tournament, because if we lose to Iowa, we might, you know, we're still in the field, but we probably end up at 11. And 11 is the easiest road, like to the final or to the Sweet 16.
If you're a top seed, if you're a lower seed,
you want to be an 11.
You want to be an 11.
No, for sure. Because like, look, Texas has to go through Butler and the winner of Notre Dame Northeastern. I mean, the other one was I can't believe. So Dayton ended up, or are they playing right now? Anyway, like. Oh no, they'll be playing on. They'll be playing tomorrow. But Dayton is in the play-in game, and they have a better. They have a better resume than most of the like double-digit seed. They probably have a better resume than Purdue, but they ended up as one of the 11s. That's a spot I really wanted to be in. UCLA? Are you kidding me? UCLA has to go through SMU and Iowa State.
No one falls upward quite like Steve Alford.
Man, hey, hopefully he falls upward in the Indiana job. Let's just cross our fingers.
We'll see if that's even open.
And the other 11 is BYU. And BYU, winner of BYU and Mississippi State, I should say, that they're playing right now. So that 11 spot would have been tasty, but we got the nine, the dreaded sacrificial lambs to Kentucky. But first we got to go through Cincinnati, and you wrote a very, very good scouting report for the Bearcats. So
I wrote this thing. It's 1700 words. And in my first sentence, I accidentally wrote that Purdue is the 8 seed and not the 9 seed. And I was corrected by this, by a reader. Thank you very much.
Of course.
And I thought, how many people opened it up, saw that I had screwed that up, and was
what a terrible, like, forget it. This guy's awful. Close.
This guy clearly does not know what he's talking about. I swear to God, I spent a lot of time researching it, folks. Just read it. Drop something in the comments. Tell me how good of a job I did. I need a victory.
So. But I don't know too much about. I didn't know too much about him before I read. My brother goes to Xavier, so I had watched Xavier play him and beat him. But that was the only game I watched all season.
They're tough. They're tall. They're athletic. They're long. They play a tough defense. So.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, but they can't score. Like, they have an awful offense.
Mm-hmm. And their big is their go-to guy. Octavius Ellis. Yeah, thank you. He's kind of their go-to weapon, but I don't know how, you know, whether he can like, if he's going to have AJ on him, if he's going to have, like, Edwards or someone like that on him, or if Davis will defend up. And check him. What do you think?
I bet Hammonds draws the assignment. He's a post player, so he's not going to be stepping out and pulling any of this Frank Kaminsky crap that Purdue had to deal with in the Big Ten tournament. He's their best offensive player, but he's not a dominant offensive player. He averages 10 points a game. He's athletic. He's got some post moves, but he's not going to go off for 30 on you. But he is a talented player. He's defensively, you know, you can get him in foul trouble, and I think that's going to be the key for Hammonds.
Gotcha.
I think Hammonds should own this matchup.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is that if Cincinnati – Matt, you know, it's going to be first to 50 wins, and their go-to guy is defended by who I think is the best player, the best defensive player in the Big Ten.
According to Jeff Goodman, the 127th best player in the tournament.
Are we going to do this? Are we going to do this right now?
Let's put a pin in it. Let's put a pin in it and do it later.
But, okay, so their wing, Troy Coppin.
He's their point guard, yeah.
That's going to be Octius, right? Like, Painter's just going to point to Octius and say, go, and Octius is just going to harass him all game, right?
Yeah, I think it'll be Octius. It'll be interesting to see who Davis matches up with. I actually think that Davis might draw their point guard because he's a little bit bigger.
Yeah, he's 6'3". So he's probably a little long. And you know, I think Octius can still handle that. He's 6'5". Dude's long.
But the other guy to watch out for is Farad Cobb. Okay. And he's a shorter guy. He's 6 foot, in quotes. So I think he might be a guy that Octius might match up with.
Okay. So those are the big three.
I'll say this too. Like, they don't have one dominant scorer and then a bunch of guys who contribute here and there. I mean, there's top scorers that go 10 points, 9.5 points, 8.5 points, 7.5 points, 6 points. You know, it's very even. Mm-hmm. So it's not just target this one guy and you'll win. They don't win because they can score, because they have people who can score. They win because they just prevent you from scoring.
Yeah, they seem, from everything I've read, they seem like a very tough, tough team. Everybody's saying that this is shaping up to be probably the ugliest first round game of the tournament, and that's I like it that way. Purdue wins that game, I think. Like if it stays ugly, you know, if Cincinnati doesn't start catching fire, I think if it stays low scoring and ugly, I trust. I mean, who's going to stop AJ? You know,
and I don't think Cincinnati has been tested to the same degree that Purdue has. To be honest with you, they beat SMU twice, which is nothing to sniff at.
No, that's good.
But SMU, you know, I don't know.
Those are good wins. I mean, those are as good as our IU wins, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'll give you that. They beat San Diego State and they beat North Carolina State. But they also got pasted by VCU, which, you know, havoc.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? Yeah.
They lost to Temple. They lost to Tulane. I mean, they lost to East Carolina. Tulane and East Carolina have RPIs greater than 200. And they lost, I mean, they lost to ECU 50-46, and they lost to Tulane 50-49.
Which one? North Florida ended up, I mean, like they're, you know, they ended up with a pretty good, like it didn't end up, that North loss Florida's didn't end was, up being the worst, right?
Purdue's worst loss was North Florida, and their RPI was in the 160s.
Okay. So that's not, you know, that's not as disastrous as it may have seemed at the time. Thank God.
Well, I mean, it didn't help, but it was.
No, I mean, it didn't. I mean, it was without that loss, you know, without either that loss or Gardner-Webb. Like
Tulane's RPI was 214. East Carolina's RPI was 220. These are conference opponents.
Yeah.
Like this isn't like some scrub that they picked up in non-con to get wins. I mean, these are really terrible.
But
the
AAC
is an awful conference.
They did end up with five wins going into their conference tournament, or did they? Yeah, into their conference tournament. That's where they played UConn, right?
Yeah, they played UConn and lost a tough game, 57-54 in the first round. And they had won the five prior to that. So
I mean that was a close one, I remember. They're good. They're a good team. But yeah, I think you're right. They haven't been tested too much. Their last real test was probably Xavier on the 18th of February. And that was a very, very close one. They also lost a double overtime game in December to Nebraska.
That's my favorite game on their schedule because it was double overtime, so 10 extra minutes, half of a half.
Yeah.
And the final score was 56-55.
Good old Nebraska.
Good old Nebraska. I didn't think Nebraska would be that.
No, Nebraska shocked me. I mean, like I did that post looking at just the deviations from all of the predictions, and the three that everybody got wrong were Nebraska, Maryland, and Purdue. And Maryland, Purdue, it's a reason to be happy. Nebraska, not as much. And Nebraska's got talent too. So I, you know, Taron Pettaway is as good as any number one. You know, Siobhan Shields, Pitchford, they're all very good players. So I don't really know how they ended up that bad, you know, losing the, you know, 10 games or something like that to end the season.
Yeah.
But anyway, so back to Cincinnati, you think we're going to grab this, or you think it's going to be close? What do you think? What's your prediction?
I think Cincinnati will by nature keep it close. I don't think you can expect to blow them out, even though VCU kind of took them to the woodshed. Like they haven't experienced a lot of blowout losses.
Yeah, and that was VCU with Justin Anderson, or not Justin Anderson, but oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. Their star that went out, Briante Weber.
Oh, Weber, yeah, okay.
So Weber was out now, but yeah, that was, you know, they were hitting their stride before conference play.
Yeah, so their losses. Let's see. They lost by 12 to Mississippi. They lost by 1 to Nebraska, 21 to VCU, 6 to Connecticut, 13 to Memphis, 4 to ECU. You know, so you don't see a lot of like butt kickings in there.
Yeah. I mean, the last one was Temple on February 10th.
16 points.
Yeah. So
So I think they're going to keep it close, but I think Purdue offensively can score even against a tough defense, especially so that one of the bigger keys, I think, is going to be tempo, because Cincinnati is the slowest. I think they're the slowest team in college basketball. They're
really
tempo rated is number 341st.
Wow. I didn't realize they were that slow.
They are so slow. And I think I made this point in my write-up that Purdue has some people who can push the tempo. I mean, Octius can push it. Bryson, PJ.
Smotherman when he's
Smotherman is really great in the open court. Davis can push it. I mean, Purdue has some people that can both rebound and go. So their matchup zone is difficult, but a great way to beat a matchup zone is to push the ball before they have a chance to get set up. So Purdue's not going to, you know, turn into the Hurry and Hoosiers overnight. But, like, compared to the Bearcats, I mean, they are kind of quick. So that'll work in their advantage, I think.
I think so. And there haven't been, at least for A.J. Hammonds, too many turnovers in this last little stretch. So in a matchup zone, the other big thing to, you know, the other very good thing to have is a big that can pass it out very accurately. You know, a big where you don't have to worry that he'll turn the ball over. So I guess I'm looking at the numbers now. AJ is actually, there was that Michigan State game, which Illinois and Michigan State, where he wasn't great. But, you know, beyond some of that, and Wisconsin, which, what are you going to do? That was Wisconsin. Against similar opponents to Cincinnati, I think AJ could do it. You know, AJ can kind of handle that. Just kick it to the open man, a skip pass maybe, and then get Mathias for an open three on the wing or something like that. I don't see a way that Cincinnati, and I don't want to say this because then we're going to lose, but it's not a good matchup for them. Like, you know, having another very, very good defensive team who hits hits the boards harder than they do, and, you know, who spreads the ball out a lot better than Cincinnati can, especially with their interior associated offense, kind of similar to what Tony Bennett has at Virginia. I think it's a bad matchup for them, and I don't think they can score points.
And they have not faced a big anywhere near as good as Hammonds, so it'll be interesting.
They're not equipped to. I mean, like, unless they collapse, like, unless what they'll do is bring somebody from the weak side to help over, and they don't think that AJ can pass over them, and or they're going to make AJ prove that he can pass across the paint, you know, pass across the lane. I think if, you know, in the last couple of games, I've seen some creative things that Matt Painter's drawn up to get Hammonds some space. And whether that has been to keep Hammonds on the weak side, the ball, on the far side wing, and then all of a sudden ball reverse it and then get it into AJ. Yeah. And then once AJ has a little bit of room, he's gotten into a zone where he's not going to be, you know, he's not going to bring the ball down as much as he did earlier in the season. He's not going to be stopped. And unless we go cold, I think if we go cold from, you know, the perimeter and everything is on AJ, then I think it's going to be a very, very close game and kind of a nail biter. But I don't know. It's Cincinnati. I'm not terribly worried, but yes, I can definitely see this statement biting me in the ass to come.
So here's my not so bold prediction. I think AJ will lead the team in scoring, and I think your boy Vince Edwards will be not that far behind. I think he'll eat on offense. I think he'll just destroy out of the high post.
I hope so. I mean, he had a great first half against Wisconsin in the tournament this past weekend, the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, nobody had a good second half. So, but, it was nice to see Vince again. They, you know, Vince and Haas kind of hit the, like we talked about on the last one, Andy, rest in peace.
I miss you, bro.
Like we talked about on the last one, Haas and Vince kind of hit the freshman wall, like was to be expected. And I think Edwards has bounced back a little bit. And, you know, if he gives us one good half, that'd be nice. But, yeah, we'll see. I hopefully expect to be playing Kentucky this weekend.
So before we exit, we'll go back to a comment that we had made about Hammonds being...
Oh, man.
So I think one of the things is once you get a reputation, it's hard for it to be broken.
Right? Especially if you're a junior. I mean, especially if you're a junior. There's a big track record of it.
And I had asked a guy, an Indiana media guy, college basketball guy, like when after the awards came out, the Big Ten awards came out, if he thought that Hammonds's reputation affected voters' perception of him when it came to stuff like Defensive Player of the Year. And he didn't think, make his response was like, yeah, maybe a little bit, not a lot. But I think maybe in the Big Ten, when where people see each other a lot more, but on the national side, I mean, he's already written off by a lot of people as, oh, he's just kind of lazy, doesn't really like to do it. And it's frustrating to see.
It was that Seth Davis story where he kind of stretched AJ's words and saying that he didn't love the game and he didn't think he needed to love the game to play well. And, you know, that Seth Davis, good times. But that storyline was absolutely true last year and the year before that. AJ didn't look like he was having fun playing at Purdue. And from all accounts and from all quotes he's been saying this year, it looked like he hadn't. It was true in the middle part of this year. So between that Vanderbilt game and the Illinois game.
Right.
So from, you know, December to January, that stretch, mid-December to mid-January. It hasn't been true for 3 months now, or for 2.5 months now. Right. It's not, you know, it's not a storyline that holds up to any kind of scrutiny anymore. Right. AJ has been fairly dominant within the last, you know, handful of games. He's not putting up the kind of numbers that if you hadn't been watching him, they would jump out at you. But he's turning away shots. He has the Roy Hibbert effect inside, the Dwight Howard effect, where nobody wants to even take a shot inside the paint when AJ's hanging around. When anybody does, he has these blocks that turn the tide of the game. And even more than that, he does it. The amount of blocks that you see that he just swats it out of bounds has lessened, and the amount of blocks where he's tipping it to himself and throwing out these outlet passes that you don't get assist like things for is growing out off the charts.
Right.
He's helping off the weak side every time. He's carried this team on the tail end of the season, you know, since that Illinois loss, since the Penn State overtime win, you know, the Maryland loss. He, for the entire second half of the season, we've been on AJ's back, and he's taken us to the tournament.
Right.
Like, I don't know what else you want from a guy. Chad Ford didn't have him ranked at all in his last top 100, and all of a sudden he's back into the 60s. Right. Like, he just didn't – he clearly just forgot to put AJ in, or, you know, some entry error happened. And he's got the same – he's got the same like motor points, and same for Jeff Goodman's, where it has him ranked, you know, pretty low in an albeit pretty stupid like rankings. Like it's a fun idea, but
it's a dumb, it's not something worth getting worked up about. It's a cute idea for a column, exactly. But there's not a lot of substance to it. Goodman has been kind of weird, 'cause I kind of liked him when he was at, what was it, CBS?
CBS. He was at CBS Sports, yeah.
And at ESPN, like, I don't know.
I mean, he's the hot take machine, right? Last year he said he'd take Aaron Kraft over Andrew Wiggins. I mean, like...
Yeah, yeah, he's sort of bought into that whole...
It's if you're, you know, if you have an opinion that is unique and loud, it's better than having an opinion that's informed. But in their defense, it is very hard to keep track of every player from 300 teams, like every relevant player from 300 teams. It's very hard to have a real opinion on all of them. But right. you would think that somebody, you know, it's like run it by Myron Metcalf, run it by Eamon Brennan at ESPN.com. Both run Big Ten blog, the Big Ten side of the blog. Run it by Dana O'Neill. She knows. There are people that you can just say, hey, read this. Is this, you know, an up-to-date thing? Same with Chad Ford. You'd think that with the amount of scouting sources that he has one Big Ten guy that he can go to and say, hey, you know, is this blurb on AJ Hammons up to date?
I think you don't understand how Chad Ford works. What he does is he picks guys at random, and then after they're drafted, he adjusts his prior prediction.
He was always high on Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? Like, he loved him.
That's the thing. Did you read that? The thing on Deadspin about that?
Yeah. It's frustrating. And to be fair, for the last 2 years, AJ has earned this reputation. But this year, it's not relevant anymore. He's his NBA stock, and Sam Vecenie, who we both like, and he's a Big Ten guy. He graduated from Ohio State.
Right.
He has AJ, I think, at 48 in his last top 100. Now, I think that's a little high, but I think, you know, because AJ is a big that can walk and chew gum, it's a value and a rim protector. It's a valuable commodity for that mid second round draft pick. So there are people that do good jobs out there. I'm not painting everybody. I'm not saying that, you know, that typical, like, oh, you ranked my player low, you suck. But it's just like run your stuff by somebody just to see if it makes sense.
Right.
And it's a very simple task. But if you want to get your stuff out first, it might not be quite convenient for you. That was my rant.
No,
that
was my rant.
I'm sorry.
I agree with that. There is talented folks at ESPN that you named two of them, and Eamon Brennan and Dana O'Neill. So yeah, I mean
they're good. And Brennan's good. An IU guy. We're supposed to hate him.
No, he's good. He catches some crap from Purdue fans from time to time, but I've always found him to be very knowledgeable about what's going on.
I like it. So if okay. Because we're not going to have a podcast after the first game of the tournament, if we lose, we lose. There's nothing to talk about, really. Like, we'll hit everything next week again. If we win, we'll probably play Kentucky or the mighty Hamptons. But if we 16
play... 16 and 17 entering the tournament, by the way.
And Murray State didn't make it? Whatever. Okay. What do you think? I mean, computers have give us like a I think 538 gave us a 4% chance of winning the Kentucky game. Out of a million, if we play Kentucky a million times, how many times does Purdue win?
I ask myself that question, and the only thing that comes to mind is just blood. Just blood.
Oh, it's not going to be good.
Like, if we play them a million times in a row and they get, like, tired. I love Purdue. But Kentucky is just on a different level. Let me put it this way. I want to put it this way. Willie Cauley-Stein is Kentucky's one of their seven-footers, okay? And he is a better perimeter defender than everyone on Purdue's team, save Raphael Davis.
That's even close. That's a close one, too.
And that's a close one. He is as good of a perimeter defender as Raphael Davis.
So if Kentucky beats Purdue, you're rooting for Kentucky to go undefeated, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because that just shuts off the IU fans.
Listen, I think I'll be pissed during the Purdue Kentucky game as their making us look like UCLA.
Totally.
But yeah, like, come on, Ray, like just shoot it from 40 feet, you know, like it'll just be, and maybe even before the game, I'll be like, you know, Rafael was the Big Ten defensive player here. AJ Hammond's played at Oak Hill with none of these guys because they didn't go to high school, but you know.
I think, yeah, I hope that Kentucky just does it. Like, let Kentucky take that away. And yeah. when did IU's one happen?
1976.
Come on, are we really still talking about this?
Yeah.
All
jokes aside, like, Kentucky's a bad matchup for everybody. I think if you took the best players off of Duke, Villanova, and Wisconsin, Kentucky would be a bad matchup for that.
You know, I, first of all, I'm not really that big a believer in this Duke team. You catch Wisconsin or Arizona on the right day. And, man, I don't know. Like, Wisconsin and Arizona are the two kind of teams. Like, Wisconsin can defend Kentucky, and they can shoot. Like, they can shoot over Kentucky's defense. And they can slow the ball down. They can minimize possessions. And they can, you know, shoot their way to a win. I could see that happening. I could see Arizona, because they're a more, believe it or not, Arizona is a more athletic team than Kentucky, and they have a few defensive players that, you know, Stanley Johnson's fantastic. Right. So I think those two teams stand a chance. If Justin Anderson of Virginia was healthy, I'd say they stand a chance, but man, it's tough. This Kentucky team that Calipari's put together is fantastic. You say what you want about him, but that guy, he can recruit and he can coach. I don't know what to tell you. He can coach. He can manage egos. He can manage expectations. He can shut out, you know, distractions.
If you don't think that John Calipari can coach, then I want you to explain to me why Kentucky is the number one rated defense in college basketball.
Phenomenal. It's the best defense that college basketball has seen in decades. Like, I mean, unbelievable.
Raw athleticism will go a long way on offense, but it won't take you very far on defense.
Especially with these kids. I mean, like, his lowest ranked recruit, his lowest player is on the entire squad is Derek Willis, who's a four-star guy who would have been the gem of Purdue's recruiting class that year.
Right.
And, you know, he's gotten this team of college superstars to buy in on defense. Like, that's phenomenal. So that, I mean, he can coach. I think if they do the undefeated thing this year, look for him to be looking. Look for him to be looking.
Nope. I disagree 100%. There's no way he goes back to the NBA. Did you read, what was her name? The USA Today reporter. She's really good.
Nicole something?
Oh, no. Arbach, right?
Yeah.
No, this was someone else.
No, but okay, let me just paint this scenario for you. The Cavaliers lose before the finals, and Kentucky goes undefeated. John Calipari and LeBron are already close.
Of course they are, because LeBron likes...
Of course. And they gave Calipari a $70 million offer to be their coach and GM before, you know, earlier in the summer, and he turned it down. Yeah, this was before LeBron was getting there. This was before Kevin Love was getting there. This was just, you know, the next coach of the Cavs. I'd say they make another run at him. And if if he wins it this year, he's got two national titles. He's got six players drafted in the first round before, which is crazy. Yeah. Just think about that. Your sixth man was drafted in the first round of the NBA. That's insane. And he's got his undefeated season. He's taken three teams to the Final Four, even though two of them are wiped out of college basketball. But he's got nothing left. Like, he can go out on top. And then Shaka Smart becomes the next coach of Kentucky.
Okay. All right. I have something. First of all, it was Nicole Auerbach
who
wrote this thing for USA Today, and she's awesome. Follow her on Twitter because she's really good. But she wrote this thing before Big Blue Nation, John Calipari as a player. But in it, he talks a little bit about his foray into the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he talks about it, I think he wants to destroy college basketball's record book. I think that would make him happy.
Maybe.
To just dominate, to be the Geno.
Yeah. That's great. That's actually Geno Auriemma. Yeah. He could do it. And he's at the perfect spot. And him and Kentucky are perfect for each other.
Yeah. They are. They are very much. I think that's what he wants to do.
And but
he makes so much money. I mean, it's ridiculous. He makes like $7 million a year something like that.
And it's all worth it. I mean, he delivers. But anyway, back to the tournament. Do you see anybody making a run? Like, do you see any surprises? Any low seeds making a run?
You know, I like Notre Dame on the right day. Mm-hmm. I think that they can. I think they're athletic and they can. I think they can make some noise. I think North Carolina is overrated, and I hope Harvard beats the crap out of them.
They won't, but they're overrated. They won't,
but they're overrated. I think Iowa State is always a team that you have to keep an eye on. I like Gonzaga, and I know that's
not really love Gonzaga
and underdog because they're a two seed, but everyone hates on Gonzaga, but they are really good this year.
They're phenomenal. Really they're outside of Kentucky, they probably have the most talent.
And they can beat Duke. I think they if they play Duke, I bet they beat Duke.
They could beat Duke.
I don't think they could get that far.
No, they could beat Iowa State. Who are the other big challenges? Virginia, I said. They could beat that entire side of the bracket. I mean, Gonzaga is real. Like I you know, Kyle Wilcher from Kentucky, Kevin Pangos, like they're really good. And Mark Few's a good coach. Like whether you want to admit it or not, like Mark Few's a good coach. So it's, you know, I think Gonzaga's a really good team.
Do you have any other team that you think?
Two lower seeds I love Dayton, but the team that they play that game, Providence, if Dayton wins, Providence versus Dayton will be phenomenal. I think that is going to be amazing. I like Providence in that one. LaDante Hinton and Chris Dunn are two NBA players.
Yeah.
And
Chris Dunn can play for the Pacers if he wants.
Yeah. And I think I like Providence to go pretty far. Probably make a Sweet 16 run. And I like Wichita. I mean, Indiana's got Wichita in the opening round. That's going to be that could either be a really good game or a blowout by Wichita. And I think they could do that. Wichita, Kansas in the second round would be really fun. Wichita, Notre Dame in the Sweet 16 would be an awesome game.
I want to see that game. I want to see Wichita State play Notre Dame.
And Wichita versus Kentucky in the Elite Eight. Would be
Kentucky wins by 18, but it's fine. It'll still be an entertaining.
It'd be a rematch of the best game of the tournament last year. True. Where and it's the exact reverse. Kentucky last year was an 8, I think, and Wichita was the 1. Like it'd be a really fun story. So I'd like to see Wichita State make a run, but those are the two I like a lot. Everybody's talking about Stephen F. Austin. I know nothing about Stephen F. Austin.
I mean, they're like. From what I've seen, they're the stereotypical small team, which is they can shoot it, and if they get hot, maybe they can pull an upset, but I don't know about that.
Yeah, Northern Iowa, just because the ghost of Ali Farouk Manesh.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I remember where I was when they beat Kansas.
That shot, that Ali Farouk Manesh shot, I want to host a weekly podcast about that shot.
I didn't get to watch the game. I was listening to it on the radio in my car in Northern Virginia, waiting for my friend Zach to call me to tell me where we were going to have dinner. That's I was in the parking lot of some shady bar. That was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a pretty fun tournament, but you know, Kentucky will just I think Kentucky will do it.
Well, and on that note, this concludes our NCAA tournament preview. So happy that we get to do this, frankly. Just happy that Purdue did it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun to be back, and it's fun to do that, like to have this conversation again. Even though we're gonna be Kentucky or Cincinnati's sacrificial lambs, but
I'm just happy to be there.
Yeah, it's great to be a part of the conversation again.
So be sure to download this and all of our other podcasts. Check out our iTunes link. And thanks for listening.
Thank you, guys.